Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're glad that you're here with us, especially because we got a great hour coming up.
Yes, we are. Thanks for hanging out. Hey, we'd love for you to join the conversation. Log on to facebook.com/ The Music Row Show and chat alongside with us.
That's right. Don't forget Twitter. You can also find us there at The Music Row Show. And then after the show, if you want to see some pictures, go to Instagram, and we got at The Music
Row
Show.
Hey, want to see some pictures?
See some pictures.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, that sounds
at The
great.
Music Row Show there as well. And hey, in case you haven't heard, Dish subscribers, you can now watch us on TV because Blue Highways, the network that our show runs on, is now on Dish.
That's right.
All over the country.
All over. You can watch us 4 times a week on Channel 73 all over the country, and for the first time ever right here in Nashville. You know, we've been on TV for 3 years.
Right.
In a very small amount of homes and nowhere right. in Tennessee. So right. it's been fantastic to know that people can watch it here.
That is very true.
Yeah.
All right, Scott, why don't you introduce this fine gentleman here?
Well, I hope the intro goes better than that last segment. Now, our guest tonight, hey, he started playing and writing music with some college buddies. Pretty soon they're gigging all around Alabama, gaining traction, growing a fan base. Quits college with 6 credit hours left to graduate.
Yay! Okay, that's just
Mom
nuts.
And dad were thrilled. Moves to Nashville. The band really gets cooking, touring coast to coast, opening for major acts, cruising with Skynyrd. Come on.
Come on.
That has to be cool.
Who doesn't do
who
that?
Who doesn't want to see Lynyrd Skynyrd in Bermuda shorts? Life is good. And then he auditions for American Idol on a lark, and boom, the next thing you know, he's a household name, part of the top 10, and has spent the last few years making some extremely cool music with his band as an indie folk duo, and now debuting as a solo artist with his new project coming out probably in the next month and a half or so here in October. We have a ton to discuss. It's a pleasure to say, Paul McDonald, we're glad you're here. Welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
And that was an awful long intro. I'm sorry, we're out of time. We're out of time, but it was great having you here.
So, you know, around here, music is all over the place, and I'm sure it was when you were growing up, too. When did you decide that music was going to be your life?
You know, it was interesting. I grew up listening to music. You know, my parents kind of raised me on the classic rock stuff.
Sure.
Like, you know, James Taylor, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, all that kind of stuff. And so I listened to music all the time, and I got a guitar when I was 16 years old. I was like playing football and trying to be all cool high school.
Wide receiver, right?
Yeah, wide receiver.
Okay.
Yeah, wide receiver. Right. And I was like, what am I going to do with this? I don't know how to play this. But I picked it up and learned a few chords and started writing songs. I was 16 and just kind of did it for fun.
And all of a sudden the girls were like, oh.
I was like, hey, this is not bad.
Okay.
But I did it for fun, and I think it didn't really start, you know, there wasn't like maybe a distinct period in time where I was like, this is what I want to do. It was probably when I dropped out of school with a few classes left. You know, it was we started this for fun. Someone came up and said, hey, you know, I was playing house parties, and they said, you know, maybe you should come and like play our bar. We'll give you you know, some money and free drinks. And I was like, wait, you'll give me money to play in
wait,
a college
what?
Bar? This is phenomenal, you know. So I started doing that, and we started picking up some traction, and I think it was like, well, I should probably go this route, and you know, and if I get booed off stage, then I can always go back to school and be a pediatric dentist, and you know, and knock on wood, they haven't booed me off stage quite yet.
Well, there you go. So that's obviously where you were heading then.
Yeah, that's where I was heading.
Oh, that's cool. So, I didn't know that.
Interesting. My son has this little thing on the inside
yeah,
of his... Oh.
I know nothing. I'm so far beyond it now. It's like now I don't know what else
we're
I
taking
do.
Your calls, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. All dental for the next hour.
Yeah.
So we had the latest iteration of the fabulous Burrito Brothers on with us a few months ago. And just with some of your past clothing choices, it's led me to believe that you're a Graham Parsons fan.
I do love Graham Parsons. The Flying Burrito Bros, all that stuff. Like, Yeah, it was really cool stuff. Obviously, the Manuel suits that that I wore on TV, that was very Graham Parsons influence. The all white suit. My friend Manny made that for me. I got the suit made before the American Idol stuff. Actually, with my band, the Grand Magnolias, I spent all my money on this. You know, this super awesome suit. I was like, our band's going to make it. And then, and then like a few months later, we dropped the record and I did the American Idol thing and was like, well, I guess I'll wear this on TV now.
Did they give you any flack for that? Going, you can't wear that.
Yeah, no, they loved it. Like Ryan Seacrest, his stylist, Miles, I remember he came in and I kind of had it together. I'd been touring in a band for 6 years and a lot of these other kids.
We're kids.
Like, you know, and they didn't know who they were musically and all that kind of stuff. And I showed up and his stylist was like, man, you kind of got it already put together. And I was like, well, I've been doing that. I have to look like a rock and roller. I've been playing, you know, gigs for a few years. And I wore that suit and he was like, dude, I don't even know what to say. And
like, you're good. Next.
You're done.
Next. But so in addition to Graham Parsons, who were other influencers for you as you guys were putting the band together for the rest of the guys too?
You know, for the rest of the guys, it was cool. It was a similar taste in music. You know, back then we were listening to a lot of like Ryan Adams, you know, a lot of the stuff that kind of comes through. The festivals, I mean, like Jason Isbell and those guys, we used to do shows with him, you know, back when he was doing the college bar thing. Zach Brown, we used to do a bunch of, you know, like the small bar shows when he was doing that with that band and stuff. And but we grew up in the same stuff, you know, Zeppelin, Stones, all that kind of stuff. So when we started this band, we wanted to be like the Bad to the Bone rock and roll band, you know, four piece sloppy, you know. And I think that was how I learned how to perform, because first off, we started the band. It was like, I can sing a little bit, but like, you know, who's gonna front this? And it was like, well, I can like distract him with this hand, you know, like look over here, jumping around and rocking. You know, it's like, I think those songs kind of suck, but like that was fun. You know?
Yeah,
like,
but man,
so the bar owners would totally pay us. We'd pack up the places and it was fun. So
whatever you do, don't stop jumping.
Yeah. Just keep moving, man. Yeah. So
that's awesome. Well, you mentioned Grand Magnolias. That was it High Tide Blues?
It was High Tide Blues prior to that. And we started in Auburn.
Was that two separate bands, or did you have a name change?
It was two separate bands. It was me and the guitar player kind of formed High Tide Blues. That was the original band, and that kind of came about. With like, I booked a gig by myself, and I bumped into this guitar player, and we started playing, and they were like, hey, you know, we need a band name. And I was like, well, dude, just tell him some garbage. It's not like this is ever going to last forever. And and so for some reason, he picked High Tide Blues, which looking back sounds like a beach, like, blues band, you know?
Yeah.
We were totally like a rock and roll kind of outfit, but it was... The band was the same two guys, me and JP, and then we just kind of switched up a rhythm section when we moved.
Okay.
When we moved out of Auburn, Alabama to Nashville. We got some new guys up here, and so it was the two same like primary songwriters.
Yeah.
Just a new rhythm section. So
before we get out of this timeline of your life, what were your parents thinking when you said, "Hey, by the way, I'm checking out six hours before graduating"?
I mean, I think they had a tough time with it, but at the same time, they knew that I was super passionate about music. And I think like there was a few shows that my parents came to where they were kind of like, oh my gosh, like they saw us on stage performing, and we were pulling in a good chunk of people at these shows in college. And my dad was like, this is the most fun that I've ever seen you have. Like, you have to go with this. And they were super, super supportive.
That's very cool.
I remember they showed up. We played Bonnaroo one year, and they showed up. And, like, there's a few gigs that I've done where my parents have been like, dude, that's so cool. And it's like, it's kind of erased all the fact that, like, yeah, I totally dropped out of school. Like, yeah.
We don't talk about that at holiday parties anymore.
Check out this awesome. It's kind of the same, like, the distracting thing.
Yeah.
Like, hey, remember that gig that I played with this person? That was cool. You know,
I don't have a diploma, but check out this suit.
Yeah, check out this suit. It's awesome.
So now anytime they start to say something, you're just like, Bonnaroo.
Yeah. Bonnaroo, whatever. There's been all kinds of crazy stories since then, man, you know?
Oh, wow.
But it's been fun.
Very cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
They're cool parents, so.
Well, so the 3 years before Idol, your band is touring and playing 150, 200 gigs a year, which is a huge accomplishment. I mean,
yeah,
that is.
Awesome,
a goal many, many, many bands have
yet to meet, much less to actually be able to sustain that for some years. So what are the best memories of that much touring? And also, what were you not prepared for about that lifestyle?
You know, that's a tough question. I mean, we started off from the bottom up. You know, we started playing in Auburn, Alabama, at school, and we would play as many gigs as we could in town. And I remember we actually made a good chunk of money when we first started playing, because those college bars pay a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we started off playing mostly covers, and mm-hmm. we would slip in our original tunes, because that's what they wanted at the sure. bars, obviously. And we made enough money to kind of keep the train moving, and it slowly grew. Man, we had some good times. I mean, we living out of a 15-passenger van and like roach motels. I remember our bass player caught bed bugs one time, and we were in North Carolina at this place called the Mountaineer Inn or something. It was so. I remember the neon sign. It was like this awesome like Mountaineer guy. I was like, we gotta stay there, and it was like. Yeah, but he passed those bed bugs around to the band for like 2 months. It just was like, that was pretty rough.
Hey, man, mind if I bunk with you tonight? Because my bed?
No.
Yeah, so yeah, that was pretty rough. But I mean, there's all kinds of ridiculous stories. I mean, those were kind of the glory days when you're playing like dive bars. You drive, you know, to Jacksonville, Florida to play for the freaking sound guy. And like, that's mm-hmm. it, you know?
Yeah.
And you have those nights where you have wins and you have major losses, where you're playing these clubs and like just ridiculous situations. Like, I remember one time our manager booked us in Atlanta for this gig that was like he's like, man, they're gonna pay you $500 to come in and do this acoustic thing for this private party at the W Hotel, and we walked in and we were only used to playing our own music. We didn't have like a thing where we could do, and we got up there and started playing, and she was like, hey. No vocals. And we're sitting around going, and it was like kind of a business. Like, people were just kind of sitting, and I was like, okay. So we're playing. And then she's like, hey, do you mind announcing like the food orders? So I'm up here playing, and I'm like, number 21, your hamburger is ready, and stuff like that. It was the most ridiculous. And I call our man. They're like, you know, you guys can eat. Like, you guys get a meal, and you guys can drink and stuff. After that, I was like, yo, we want the lobster tail and, like, heavy-duty whiskey drinks. Like, we crashed at the W&I. But there's stories like that, you know, all over the place where we were talking about the Lynyrd Skynyrd cruise a second ago. That was a ridiculous time. You know, we were kind of the young... you know, rock and roll band from the South, and that it was like Skynyrd and Molly Hatchet and all these like
fifty-year-old,
like,
you know,
yeah, like hardcore Southern rock guys, man. And that was, and we were this kind of young indie rock group, and that was an interesting time for sure.
Were the crowds into it? I mean,
the crowds loved it, man. They,
cool.
I remember that's when I first bumped into the guys from Driving and Crying, a band. They were on that thing, and Kevin let me get up and sing like Straight to Hell with him, which was kind of cool, man. And like, all those guys were super nice, except for there was this one band that we didn't really know the rules. We got super drunk one night and like stole one of the bands. We didn't steal it. No, we're stealing it, but we were like back in their green room drinking all their beers. And I remember they were like, "What are these young kids doing, stealing all of our beers?" So, yeah.
We're not stealing it. We're reappropriating.
Also, you thought this was like the green room for all the bands.
We're filtering it for you.
Like 21-year-old punk rock. Like, we didn't know, you know. But there's all kinds of good stories, man, you know.
Nice.
You know, being on the road, living in a 15-passenger van with a bunch of guys.
That's a lot of odor right there.
Yeah.
That is a lot of odor.
Like Funyuns and Farts.
Wow. There's the title of your next album.
That's
right
it.
There.
Funyuns and Farts. That's
Nice. Oh, boy. Hey, we got to take a break. We want to remind you that this segment's brought to you by the Mountaineer Inn. It's the kind of stay that stays with you for a long time. You'll never forget your visit. No, actually, the segment's brought to you by our friends at Toyota of Cool Springs.
Yeah, Scott and I are both Toyota drivers. We love that dealership. They strive so hard to give you an excellent customer service experience, not only on the sales side, but also on the service side, which, you know, obviously you're going to need it at some point.
Well, and they have what is it, the 3-day exchange policy on any car you buy,
lifetime warranty, unlimited time and miles warranty on every car.
That's insane.
That is insane.
I don't know how they do it. Go see George and ask him how do you do this.
This is crazy.
And best of all, no bed bugs.
No bed bugs at the Toyota dealership. So go check them out, toyotaofcoolsprings.com. And we are going to be back in just a few minutes with Paul McDonald. You're listening to The Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's a tune called Sing Out.
It's off the Grand Magnolia album.
That's right. Our guest this hour is Paul McDonald. And he was that's him singing right there with the Grand Magnolia.
And waving his hands.
And waving his hands all over the place. If you listen real close, you can hear his mom in the background. Woo-hoo!
She's screaming it out for sure. Yeah.
So obviously a lot of people know you from your time on American Idol. We've referenced that a little bit. You did really well. Top
yeah,
eight.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
And Scott and I, we've had a few other friends over the years be on different singing competition shows. And it's almost like the strategy is to not win, because it's almost like not winning is actually better. Talk about how that was for you and what opened up for you as a result.
You know, it's interesting, you know, like people do say that. It's like, man, you just kind of need to get in there just far enough and then dip out, you know,
right.
So you don't get stuck with the heavy duty contracts and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I didn't plan on first off getting that far at all. Like you said, when we were first for the intro, it was like I kind of tried out on a whim. Mm-hmm. Our guitar player's girlfriend at the time was on a show called So You Think You Can Dance. Mm-hmm. And she was like, Paul, you got
I love that show.
You like it? Yeah. It's Nigel, the same guy who does Idol, does that show. So
right.
One of the producers. So she was like, hey, you know, you should go and do this show. And I was like, no way I'm freaking doing American Idol. You kidding me, dude? Like, I mean, we just got off the Skynyrd cruise, Bonnaroo. Like, I write my own music. I'm so such an artist, man. You know,
I have a nudie suit, man.
It's like, man. For some reason, you know, she got me to go in there. I sang an original song at the
I audition. Remember that.
Yeah, I think I was the first person to ever do that on the
really?
Show, which was kind of a cool thing. And all the guys in my band were proud. I was like, well, since I kind of blew off this tour and this new record that we just spent all of our money on to go to this TV show, I should probably try to promote that record while I'm on here.
Yeah, right.
As I can. But yeah, it was a cool time.
You know? That's good. And obviously Idol does big things for you professionally and exposure wise.
Absolutely.
But how does that whirlwind affect you creatively when you're in the middle of it, as far as writing? I mean, were you able to access all of that while you're in the middle of this maelstrom?
You know, it was really, really tough. That was something that I kind of struggled with, the most out of that whole process was the creative juice, because, you know, before I didn't know that side of things. You know, I lived in a 15-passenger van. We were touring and playing, you know, 150, 200 dates a year, and that was all I knew. And then to hop from that into a world of not so much creativity at all, it was kind of, you know, it's a reality TV show, and it's not so much like let's create some really brilliant art.
It was like, so
we were singing.
It's Elvis week.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, you guys need to learn a dance and sing some songs. And I was like, I'm a terrible dancer. I suck at, choreographed dance. But it was fun, you know. It was a break away from the band and from the grind of that. It was kind of a break away from that. And I learned so much, about performing on TV. I learned a bunch about working with big producers, super talented musicians. I got to meet some phenomenal people. So it was awesome. You know?
I'm just curious about performing on TV. What are some things that we might not know as a musician if you get a chance to go do that?
I mean, it's like for Idol, you kind of have to play to the cameras, you know, as opposed to when you're doing a live show, there's only like maybe 600 people in the room, mm-hmm. which to me, I was like, this is easy, man. I know how to handle a club. Like,
right.
I know how to, like, at the end of every performance, everyone in here is going to be like, that rocked.
Yeah.
But, through the TV, it's like, that dude was totally off key, and you could, like, it's like you can't hear stuff. Also, we didn't have in-ears, which are, you know, monitors,
right.
obviously, that you can hear yourself for a lot of the time, so you had to kind of stand where the monitors were facing under the thing. It was just a lot of tricks, you know?
You got, because I watched a bunch of it on YouTube, you know, yeah. last couple of days, and you saw how you got to where you were really looking right into the camera, and you know,
it's a show, yeah,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like you have to, and a lot of those songs they picked for me, and you know, yeah, it's totally.
That must be the hardest thing, I think, is you're supposed to be picking a song that's going to either get you booted off the show or advanced,
totally, yeah.
and you don't have. That much control over.
No, I mean they make it seem like you do, but there's a lot of back and forth on that stuff. You know, like I yeah. said, it's a TV show, and there was some decisions that I totally made, but there was some times where I was like, man, I don't even know this song. Like what? Like I'm having to learn this today. Yeah. But it was cool, man. They work you really hard.
Yeah.
And I learned that's something I learned to do is like. Work. I mean, we didn't get too much sleep at all. I think that's
yeah, rough on your voice.
That's terrible on your voice, yeah. but that's also great TV, man. Everyone's yeah. cranky and their voices yeah. are going out. And,
you know, drama,
hospital.
Yeah.
It's like,
can you make it? Yeah.
yeah, it's like, we're not getting paid anything. Everyone's grumpy and cranky. You know, it's like perfect for a TV reality show.
Yeah. I would have loved to have seen your texts on the night. Where you had to do the choreographed thing and the with the group yeah. sings. I just imagine your band texting you saying,
dude, I caught some major heat. Yeah. I caught some major heat, but at the same time I was going like, how many people like can check off like their life list of like singing with Tom Jones in an all white suit, like doing some dance moves like the Backstreet Boys.
Exactly.
Ridiculous in front of millions and millions of people.
Right. Like,
yeah. Well, let me check my list.
This is so outrageous.
Nope, not on there.
Like, this is outrageous that I'm actually doing this right now, you know? Like, so that's the way that I looked at it. A lot of times people could get upset and stuff, and then you kind of have to sit back and put it in perspective and
sure.
go, like, this is ridiculous. Like, what an opportunity. What a cool thing to do. Like, you know, I got to sing with Stevie Wonder one night.
Yeah,
like,
that's awesome.
We sang Happy Birthday to Steven Tyler, and that was like, what? Yeah. What's happening like with my life now? And
just
like,
meeting Steven
just,
Tyler.
Just meeting
Come on,
Steven Tyler. And, yeah, and like, and that whole world, man. It really opened up so many doors. Like, it went from, you know, 215 Pastor Van, and that world opened up because so many people watched that. I mean, I remember like being on Jay Leno with like John Travolta, and he was like, dude, I'm such a huge fan. And I was like, what, Travolta, you watch American Idol? That's so, like, mm-hmm. crazy, man, you know. But a lot of folks watched the show, and it really did open some doors and do some cool things, you know?
Well, and I know I'm sure your bandmates were teasing you now and then, but come on, it did some great things for this album.
Absolutely.
For the Grand Magnolia
album.
Grand
Magnolia's album did really well. It was on Billboard Heat Seekers, and we never got a really tour off of it because right after the we released it, and then I went out west and did the Idol stuff, and then had to be on that tour.
The Idol tour.
For a solid, I mean, I was doing the Idol stuff for a solid year, but man, it helped out a bunch with that band, and it also showcased, like, you know, that's why I'm really happy that we had that record out, because, you know, a lot of the stuff I was doing on TV wasn't exactly who I was as an artist, you know, it's, you kind of, like,
but that
you
is.
Kind of give and take, like, you
sure.
know, say, I will try to, like, do exactly what you guys want, but at the same time, it's not exactly who I am, like, you know, I don't prefer singing, you know, this song and running around doing the Macarena kind of stuff.
yeah.
It's not really me, but
I don't
like,
do disco.
I had that record to kind of go like, if you guys like, you know, me singing this cover, you know, on TV, then maybe you'll Google the name and dig up, some of my records and stuff. So it was cool.
That's cool.
Well, we'd love to hear you do a song
yeah,
for
yeah,
us
yeah,
tonight
would,
if
totally.
You feel like it.
Yeah.
And actually, we would actually request if you could do the Macarena. That
oh, yeah,
would be
like, right,
while
so
you're playing.
Awesome. yeah.
Hold on a second. Let's hit the tuner.
Yeah.
There we go. There. Now we can hear
here
it.
Here we are. All right. So like you guys were saying, you know, this is like it's the first time that I've done a solo project. I've been doing touring, you know, playing music for about 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and I always have been in bands. High Tide Blues, the Grand Magnolias. and then been with my ex-girl with the folk duo stuff. But this is one that'll be on the new record, and it's more of a stripped-down, you know, acoustic version of the song. But it's all very real. This is a sad song, but I was pretty sad when I wrote it. So, cool. Yeah, it's called "Once You Were Mine." Well, I'm stranger than I used to be. I lost my job and my wedding ring. I still got the tattoo where it used to be. It reminds me of you constantly. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot, yeah, I've been thinking about us. I've been thinking how hard it's been giving you up. And I've been sleeping with strangers and filling my cup. Yeah, but nothing I do's ever enough. Yeah, darling, I'm tired of living with your ghost and walking on wires and trying not to fall. Yeah, my heart is heavy, your voice so cold, and I don't wanna hear it. Once you were mine, but you're not anymore. And I'm stronger than I used to be. At least that's what I'm trying to believe. I'll be done with this time, I'll get over this grief. And I'll get all myself back that you stole from me. Yeah, darling, I'm tired of living with your ghost and walking on wires and trying not to fall. Yeah, my heart is heavy, your voice so cold, and I don't wanna hear it. Once you were mine, but you're not anymore. Yeah. Oh, oh. One of these days I'll quit seeing your face in all these empty picture frames. You'll be out of my head, you'll be out of my dreams. I'll be young, I'll be bold, I'll be wild, I'll be free. I'll be young, I'll be bold, I'll be wild, I'll be free. Yeah, darling, I'm tired living with your ghost and walking on wires and trying not to fall. Yeah, my heart is heavy, your voice so cold, and I don't wanna hear it. Once you were mine, but you're not anymore. Yeah, once you were mine, but you're not anymore. Yeah, once you were mine, you're not anymore.
Yeah. Listen. Woo! Yeah. Hey, screaming cheers, and yeah. Clapping
we
outside.
Got a standing ovation out there. That's awesome.
I don't know anyone was watching out there.
He's not used to people watching him when he sings, you guys.
Yeah, gosh. Look away.
Hey,
thanks, guys.
I actually was hoping you would play that song. I love that song, so yeah, thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah. That's a great song. Thanks. Well, that's as good a spot as any to take a break, so let's go ahead and do that now, and we'll be back with a whole lot more of Paul McDonald here on The Music Row Show.
Cool. Cheers, guys.
myself, and I don't care for no one else.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. You know that voice. That's Paul McDonald and his band Grand Magnolia is doing a song called Heartbreak.
Yeah.
We just had to wait till he started singing.
Can I make a...
Yeah?
A prognostication?
Oh, well, that sounds like it would have hurt.
I think I can feel safe to say that's the first time this song's ever been played on WSM radio.
I don't know about that. I think Eddie Stubbs has it in heavy rotation. Come to think of it, I think he does.
Welcome back to the Music Bros Show. Can we get another song from you?
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Since the last one was super super sad and depressing, man, I'll play something kind of upbeat and happy, man. This is
great.
No one's really heard this tune because I totally wrote it a few days ago.
Great, fresh.
It's the idea of kind of like when you go through the ups and downs of life and stuff, and everything is kind of in a dark spot, and then someone new comes into your life, and you go like, oh, wait a second, everything is so much better, and like it just kind of changes things. So this was an idea of like how it's been an interesting year for me, but somebody walked in and kind of changed that for a quick second. I don't really know the title of this one yet, but
okay.
You know. It's been a really tough year. I learned to smoke cigarettes, drink too much, share my bed, and say things I regret. But that's a part of living. That's a part of coming of age. Yeah, I know I wasn't myself, and I was doing anything to give it away. But I'm breaking down these walls, I'm shaking off these chains, and now that I'm with you, it's so much better, babe. And I'm turning all these lows in the glitter, silver, and gold. It's so much better, babe. So much better, baby. So much better, baby. So much better, baby. So much better with you. Ooh. So tempt me to get higher. Why don't you tempt me with your fuse? Now the light you burn is paradise, and darling, there ain't nothing to lose. Why don't you meet me on the east side? Stumble with me from your car. Wanna kiss your neck in our favorite booth in the back of the red door. Well, I'm breaking down these walls, I'm shaking off these chains, and now that I'm with you, it's so much better, baby. And I'm turning off these lows in the glitter, silver, and gold. It's so much better, baby. So much better, baby. So much better, baby. So much better, baby. So much better with you. Ooh. Ooh. And I know it, I know it, I know it, I know it, I know. The only one I want. Ooh. Ooh. Now I know it, now I know it, now I know it, now I know. You're the only one I want. I'm breaking down these walls, shaking off these chains, and now that I'm with you, so much better, babe. And I'm turning off these lows in the glitter, silver, and gold. So much better, babe. So much better, babe. And I know it, I know it, I know it, I know. You're the only one I want. So much better, babe. So much better, babe. And I know it, I know it, I know it, I know. You're the only one I want.
All right.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay.
I have two ideas for the title.
Yeah.
So Much Better, Babe. Cool. Or Autumn in Connecticut. Just a thought.
It's a tough choice.
Sounds pretty legit.
Yeah. Or just AIC. Let people guess.
Let them guess.
Let them guess.
Work for it.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We've got lots more with Paul McDonald. You're listening to The Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's a great tune called Bouquet of Lies. Bouquet, bouquet, you say bouquet, I say bouquet of lies. And that's from an album called I'm Not Falling Down.
I'm
Not Falling.
By Paul McDonald and Nikki Reed.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Nice.
That was a cool indie folk project there. Yeah. And we're here with Paul McDonald, whose solo project is coming out very, very soon. And you can catch him playing all over the place. He's festivals and shows.
I think the next gig I've got in Nashville, I'm doing a thing at City Winery. They're having a Tom Petty tribute.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, I have. It's called Into the Great Wide Open.
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
Come on close. We want to hear you.
It's a bunch of cool Nashville artists and stuff, and I got asked to do that, man. So I'm going to be singing a little Tom Petty action.
Nice.
And what's it benefiting?
It's Musician's Corner. Those guys have been real cool. And they've got a whole website and the whole thing. You can probably find it, musicianscorner.com.
Okay.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, you are such a unique vocalist, an artist. How do you go about defining your own sound when pretty much the music industry wants to put you in a box, put you in a mold that they can easily market? So
totally.
How do you do that?
You know, it's interesting because, I've kind of explored with different sounds for the past 10 years. You know, it's like when you played these records, like the Grand Magnolias was more of a rock band.
Sure.
And this last record that I did with Nikki was more of like an indie kind of folk, Americana thing. So this next chapter, I wanted to make bigger sounds and explore with different a different way of production that I hadn't done in the past.
Along
the lines of Bright Lights, yeah, okay. Which is a more of a kind of a pop-oriented production.
It's great sound.
Well, thanks
that song.
So much. Thanks
cool
so much.
Vibe
I'm
to
excited
it.
About that stuff, and it feels real good live. I've done a few of these new tunes, and it just, it's big, you know? It's like it's a bigger sound, and coming from after doing the Americana thing with Nikki for those few years, it was it's a really amazing music. I was super, super proud of those records, but it was more kind of sleepy, sleepy mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
And I wanted to kind of get out and rock in this chapter of my life. I want to move around and play kind of big running around shows.
Sure.
And
watch this hand.
Kind of front a band, you know?
Yeah.
There you go.
Instead of sit back behind an acoustic guitar, I kind of wanted to do the front man thing and so I think this stuff still lands in pop, but it's singer-songwriter pop, stuff. And my voice has such a weird texture that you can kind of sit it with anything. But, mm-hmm. I think we're pushing for probably AAA radio, and we'll see where it lands from there,
Very
well,
cool.
I was impressed with the production on it.
Thanks a bunch.
Was that the writing of those songs, was that from a tracks point of view, or how did you...
How we did that, it was funny because most of all the records I've done in the past have been with a live band. We come in there and track it live, and we're all in the room together. And this was... I wrote most of this with my buddy in East Nashville in his basement, an artist named Mark Sibilia, who's one of my great buddies. And we wrote a bunch of that stuff and literally produced it at his place and in his basement. Bright Lights, I sang that vocal in his closet,
That's incredible.
But now you're out of it.
Yeah, now I'm
easy,
out of
it. Easy. What are you doing, Hino? I could see Twitterverse explode.
I'm just kidding.
Okay, stop that. Stop.
Busted, man.
Yeah.
Mark's wife is still going to be not happy about that. Yeah. But yeah, it's cool. So we're using some synth sounds and some cool stuff like that. But But it wasn't like, you know, we didn't reach out to a huge producer. This is the first one of the first records Mark's produced, and he's like 28 years old. So
oh, wow.
Like, so it was cool. We just kind of built it on our own and did it that way. But it wasn't, when we wrote the songs, it was with an acoustic guitar and piano. So we
okay.
were like, and then we kind of built it around that because, you know, that's, if you guys know this the best, it's like if those songs can be stripped down with an acoustic guitar and piano and they still make sense and they're still some good
right.
songs,
and you can
then they
yeah.
work. You know, like sometimes it's opposite. When you have a huge track coming in and then you write to the track, it's like, well,
you're thinking, oh, this is cool.
Yeah, will this actually translate?
Like, try singing it with just a guitar.
Yeah, it's like probably not, you know. So what's up, guys?
Well, let's talk writing because I'm imagining you're doing a lot of co-writing in Nashville.
Absolutely, yeah.
Writing roots rock or pop rock, it's different than writing country. And I imagine
sure,
sometimes
yeah.
you're with country writers and stuff.
Absolutely,
what,
yeah.
How do you kind of jump those gaps and what are some of the differences sensibility wise? Like, there's things you can do writing pop that you really can't do country wise.
For sure. You know, today I wrote a track with one of my buddies who's a great pop singer here in town. And it was like, hey, let's double up the chorus real fast and do for these. And lyrically, it doesn't have to be as strong, I think, when you're doing pop music sometimes. It's mm-hmm. more about the hook and the track
sure.
a lot of times.
And the feel.
And the feel. Does it feel good? Do you feel good?
Doesn't necessarily even need to make sense, really.
For sure. You know, it's like, but with country music, it's a whole lot about the lyric and the story. And man, coming back into town, like when I first came back, I was in Los Angeles for a few years, and I had never really done too much co-writing at all. I'd been in these bands, and I wrote with, you know, my guitar player in my band or mm-hmm. with my ex-wife with that project, but it was always me and the people in the band who would write. And coming back into town, I was like, well, I don't have a band anymore. But I don't want to just sit around in my place all day writing songs by myself. Like, I want to like get out and kind of like meet some new people and do this. So when I first moved into town, I booked as many co-writing sessions as possible. I didn't have a publisher or anything. I just called up my buddies that were in that world and said, hey, I'm trying to write a record. Can you book me some writes? And we set up. I pretty much wrote with anyone and everyone that I could, you know.
Yeah.
And I learned so much from that, like, and I'm still learning from it. I try to write as much as I can now because it's just a muscle that needs to be exercised all the time. Like,
right.
You know, for these band records, I was like, I would write 12 songs in a year being on the road and be like, well, these are the ones for the album.
Right.
You know? Like, these
right.
are the ones.
I got 12.
Yeah. And I think for this last record, I probably wrote over 150 songs, something like that. Maybe,
wow.
Which was a whole lot for me. You know?
That's going to be a long CD.
That's a long
yeah,
CD,
yeah,
man.
Wow.
Yeah,
well, you say you've learned a lot. What are some of the things that you've picked up in the last several months?
You know, like melodies, I've gotten better at guitar, you know, and piano. I've learned, it's just lyrical stuff. Like, I used to write based around feel. You know, sometimes I would just like mumble things out and say things and like really not dissect songs. It would just kind of come out and go like, man, that just feels cool. It sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
And like, when you can figure out how to make things sound good, but also have such a like a real deep meaning, and man, it's also one of those things where when you're sitting in a room full of super freaking talented like country songwriters or just hit songwriters in general,
mm-hmm.
that you want to
you
want to
step
at
your game
stuff,
up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I played the Bluebird for the first time ever, you know, a few weeks ago, and I was sitting in a room. It was like my buddy Heather Morgan, Ross Copperman, and John Knight, and all these guys have amazing, they're phenomenal songwriters.
We've had Heather. Did we have Ross on?
No, but we want to.
We've had Heather on.
Yeah, those guys are super cool. And I'm sitting around, and man, I'm so out of the country loop, but because I'm here, and these are my buddies, I'm like, I'm kind of in it. I remember, and Ross played this one song called like John 3:16, John Deere. John,
oh yeah, Deere. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, dude, that song is freaking awesome, man.
Yeah.
Like, who sings that? And he's like, dude, that's like Keith Urban's single on the radio. Right?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man.
Oh yeah, I knew that.
But man, it's like those guys know how to write songs, man. And that's something that I'm trying to get so much better at because I can sing and I can play, but like to write a good song is a whole different talent.
Yeah.
You know. So
I have to imagine that being a recording artist makes it a little easier calling around saying, hey, I want to book some rights, you know, get me some hit writers to write with, you know.
It has been a little bit easier to get into to certain rooms based sure. on the artist thing. You know, a bunch of my buddies that aren't artists or can't sing as well or, you know, play as well, it's harder for them to get into rooms. And thank goodness I've built up a network of you know, friends and, you know, players over the years.
Sure.
That I can, you know, I can't always get into rooms, but it's been a little bit easier over the past few years based on, you know, even the American Idol stuff. Is
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Some doors and all that stuff. But I just try to write with as many people as possible, you know. It's fun, man. It's fun, like, you know, trying to crank out these tunes and, you know, making something every day. You're like, oh, man. This is the best song I've ever written. And then, like, you listen back and say, yeah, maybe not. But, you know,
yeah. Until the next day.
Until the next day.
Yeah, then yeah, that's yeah. the best song
but
you've written.
But it's fun. You know?
That's true, though. You know, there's so many times when we write or when you're I'm so excited about a song and I've had people say, we should demo this. I said, no, let's give it about 3 weeks. Absolutely. And you go back and listen, and you're like, golly, I was so excited about this, but not so much now.
That was probably why I shouldn't have played the newest song that I wrote. It's like,
no, that was good.
No, that was cool. That was cool. I enjoyed that.
Thanks, man. But yeah, it's interesting, you know, like, and I feel like that's what makes a good song. It's like, it's nuts, man. Like, I started working on this record, you know, over like last summer is kind of when I first moved into town and started writing it. And it was like, I recorded so many songs and listening back, you listen back to these. And I was like, oh, man, this was the one that I thought was going to be like the one for the radio, or this is going to be the single. And, this, and you listen back now and you're going like, man, thank goodness I didn't put that out yet. That's like it gives you time to really put things in perspective.
If we had B-sides anymore, then
there you go. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, before we run out of time, website.
It's www.thepaulmcdonald.com.
Twitter.
It's at thepaulmcdonald.
Instagram.
At thepaulmcdonald.
Yeah.
Are you sensing a theme here?
Yeah, yeah, there it is.
Autumn in Connecticut.
No. Look for that album on thepaulmcdonald.com.
At thepaulmcdonald. And you're a big Twitter guy, so.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. I kind of try to post stuff that I'm doing every day, you know.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Hey, go visit themusicrowshow.com. Find out what's going on with us. We'll see you next week on The Music Row Show.